I'm Sarah Beck for the U.S. Department of Agriculture with the question, just how good is good? Good, the USDA's third quality grade for meat, is not as juicy and flavorful as the higher grades, prime and choice. But good is somewhat more lean, acceptably tender, and it's usually less expensive. You should cook most good grade meat with moist heat. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
This is the sound of salmonella gyrating on your undercoat.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I said that so enthusiastically. I am Chase Fillane. Derek's marking me. I am Chase Fillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. And, we have a virus.
New Hampshire primary.
Are we sticking with that for now?
We'll hit the virus in a minute, but the New Hampshire primary, because we got the losers before the break, which I have as Pete Buttigieg, nice finish, Amy Klobuchar, a lot of momentum, money flowing her way, Michael Bloomberg, his evil master plan is falling right into place. So let's talk about the losers. Elizabeth Warren. You finished.
Let's talk about the losers, Elizabeth Warren.
You finished without a single delegate.
Yeah, that was a sad zero next to her name.
Single digit percentage in a state that knows you well.
That, I was going to say, that I think was the kicker. That, where are my notes on this? That, like, Klobuchar is from Minnesota. Like, New Hampshire doesn't know her. Like, New Hampshire isn't expected to have her back.
Right.
They are totally expected to have Elizabeth Warren's back.
Right.
Like, New Hampshire, for all intents and purposes, is part of Massachusetts. Like,
if you live in southern New Hampshire, you're probably watching Boston television stations.
You could be listening to us right now.
Lord knows they've been advertising on both sides of the border. They hear about everything that she does. We hear about everything the New Hampshire senators do.
Oh, yeah. Like, one of the most Boston sports bars that I've ever been to was in Plaistow, New Hampshire.
Yeah. So, you know, New Hampshire looked at Elizabeth Warren, is quite familiar with Elizabeth Warren, and said, no, we're not. And here's where I think that campaign went wrong. If you're Elizabeth Warren, you do not want to run your campaign on the concerns of upper middle class coastal elites. And that's what her campaign is about. Oh, free college. Oh, free health care. Oh, free. All the things that like semi-wealthy white people complain about.
I was gonna say all the things that it's like, so does she think the entire country is Cambridge or
And then working class, because I'll tell you, one of the moments that derailed her campaign was that guy that walked up to her in Iowa and said, listen, I worked, I saved money, I paid my kids way through college. Do I get my tuition reimbursed? And she laughed at him. That's it. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you're done. And I've been sitting here for months talking about how out of touch she is with reality. Now we've seen it. Now, she is going to drag herself through until Super Tuesday, because she has every reason to believe that she's going to win Massachusetts. She may not, but she has every reason to believe that she's going to win Massachusetts. And she may pick up some delegates along the way. So if you're Elizabeth Warren, you're going to do this, because right now it is shaping up to be a tight race at the convention. And everyone who holds delegates has power, which means you can argue for a vice presidential nomination. You can argue for a cabinet position. You can argue for your pet issue to wind up as part of the Democratic platform. And all you have to do is say, I will give you my delegates. That's why she's going to stay in it. She'll be out of the race after Super Tuesday, but she'll stay with it for that long.
I mean, that just sounds so, I mean, you're probably right. And also proving all of the reasons that I don't like Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
She's just snaky. Is snaky the right word? Is that the word I'm looking for?
Skeletor, I will, is acceptable as well. I think Skeletor had a snake.
She reminds me of, like, so my mom's best friend, or one of my mom's best friends, is my godmother, and I love her, and she is like the most wonderful woman. She's an amazing woman. I've only seen her like mad a couple of times in my life. And when she gets mad, she looks exactly like Elizabeth Warren looks all the time.
Yeah.
Like, Mom, if you're listening, I'm talking about Pam. But like I said, she's like the nicest woman ever. But this, like when she gets mad, you know, Elizabeth Warren is like, talk about resting bitch face. I mean, like, that's Pam's mad face is Elizabeth Warren's all the time face.
Yeah. You know, a quirk of our license prevents us from endorsing candidates and telling people how to vote. But when they lose, we can drag them. Andrew Yang, loser. Turns out that offering everybody in the country $1,000 to vote for you was not going to get you in the White House.
Come on. That's just insulting. At least $5,000.
Did get more votes than Deval Patrick. Deval Patrick got like 1,900 votes, and Andrew Yang got like 4,200.
Try this on for size. I constantly forget that Deval Patrick's even in it.
What?
Like, that's
you and everybody else.
Yeah. I was going to say, that's not a...
I think I saw one Deval Patrick campaign ad, and it's like, is he even in this? What are we doing here?
Yeah, like Yang dropped out, and Deval Patrick didn't. It's like, dude.
No, he dropped out this morning.
Oh, he did drop out this morning. Oh, I'm looking at a... Okay, I was going to say.
So, yeah. Yang,
I'm looking at a... This article's from, 16 hours.
Yang last night got out. You know, Yang may have made a case for cabinet position, so that could pay off for him.
Well, that's the thing that I was, like, thinking about when I said the term...
Oh, this is worse than that. Yang got 8,300 votes. Deval Patrick got 1,266.
Oh, that... hurts.
1,266. Like, you're down with the write-in candidates. Andrew Yang finished behind Tulsi Gabbard. Woof.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Well, and that's what I was, when I was talking earlier about the candidates that I think of as sort of Ross Perot-ing, where it's just like, yay, I'm in a presidential campaign. Woo. That, Andrew Yang, the thing you said about the cabinet, that's a perfect example of like why it makes sense to even bother. Like, because it's, okay, I'm probably not going to be president, but people are going to look and be like, wow, he really hung in there and he obviously knows what he's talking about because he talked about it on a stage with me.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a good way to, I mean, like, think about how many actors became friends with the person who ended up being like a huge star, and then that huge star keeps putting them in their movies because they both went to the same audition.
Right.
And that's how they met. Like, there's definitely something to be said for that.
Tom Steyer has to go on the loser list. That guy has been burning.
I like that that's what you've called it.
That guy has been burning up the airwaves with his political ads since last fall. And he pulled 3.6% of the vote in New Hampshire. I can't imagine. It's his money. He can do whatever he wants here. But I can't imagine that this is the result that he's looking for. But I'm also convinced that he's stubborn enough to just stick this thing out.
If you've got the money, just you could just bank on everyone else falling apart.
Yeah, Biden's going to go all in on South Carolina now.
I was going to say, Biden his time. Ah.
Tulsi Gabbard really should be out of this at this point. And because she only did marginally better than Andrew Yang. If you don't get anything out of Nevada, that time for her to go. So we're going to start to see this thing winnow, and it's going to winnow very quickly. Elizabeth Warren, I predict, is going to be gone after
Super Tuesday.
After Super Tuesday. She should win Massachusetts.
Being the operative.
And, don't underestimate the power of the long game and having those delegates and what having those delegates means if the convention winds up deadlocked on a candidate. Because for a number of these candidates, that now becomes an attractive proposition, which is if I stick around here and we wind up in a 50-50 with, Bloomberg and Bernie Sanders or Pete Buttigieg and Bloomberg or a three-way with Sanders and Buttigieg and Bloomberg, I've got some power.
Yeah.
And that's hugely meaningful. If you know you can't get the win, you can at least stick around for the influence. The other big loser in my eyes is Bernie Sanders. Okay. Yeah, you got 26% of the vote, which means you rounded up the most hardcore left-wing progressives.
Yeah.
That's not going to beat Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump can reliably count on 31% of the vote in the United States based on the last election. I know you're a Bernie fan.
I was going to say, I get very torn talking about this subject because I am a Bernie fan. And not for the reasons that, bleeding heart, hardcore, I'm so far to the left that I'm going to fall over it, liberals are. I don't think it is likely that Bernie Sanders will win. Would I like it to happen? Yes, absolutely. But if Trump, that's the problem, is that Trump, personality-wise, is absolutely a total disaster. In terms of, did he bring our country to a screeching, fiery halt? No, he didn't.
No, he actually did some good things for the country.
If he had, then I would say that Bernie Sanders has a chance of winning the 2020 presidential election. But he didn't, because that's him leading us all into hell is the only way that Bernie Sanders could win.
I think
Mike Bloomberg, or, someone of the like, can win. Bernie, he's too far left.
But here's the problem. And I
want him to be president. I have to make that very clear. I'm going to start crying.
But you can't say that on this show because of our license. So you don't want him to be president.
I don't want him to be president.
Here's the problem. Inertia favors an incumbent anyway. The only thing that favors an incumbent more than inertia is a good economic environment.
Yeah, and which we're in.
And as I said, we're in the golden halo before the whole thing comes tumbling down like a house of cards, because that's what that's Donald Trump's history in business right there. Oh, look at all these buildings. I got the Park Plaza. Look at all. We have the best and the greatest. And then he's filing bankruptcy a week later because he can't pay his creditors, which in this case, I believe, are Ukraine and Vladimir Putin. No, I'm kidding. I don't know that for a fact.
China.
So if you are the Democrats, you either have to come up with some idea that surpasses this, or you have to say what Michael Bloomberg is saying, which is, hey, we can do this without that guy pulling the levers. And this, I believe, is what Bloomberg is campaigning on, because one of the issues that the Democrats would love to run on is the environmental record. But here's the problem.
The American people don't care. They don't care. They're not invested in the concept of climate change. They don't want to hear about it. As they especially don't want to hear about it when it means their taxes are going to go up or costs of things are going to go up or any of that. They're like, no, forget it. I want health care fixed. I want the opium problem fixed. I want the homeless people off the streets.
That's the thing is that...
I want a living wage. Can we get those?
That's the thing is that, like, Greta, for all your work, climate change and things like it, but climate change is the best example of this, still seems like a far off, yeah, we'll get to it problem.
Yeah.
People are more interested in the, this is affecting me tomorrow.
Yeah.
Problems. And that's, you're exactly right. It's healthcare, living wage. What were the other two you mentioned? Healthcare, living wage.
The opioid epidemic.
Yeah. Like these are things that could ruin someone's life tomorrow.
If we're going to plan,
we don't see a tidal wave coming towards Medford right now. It doesn't feel urgent.
Let me make it as stark as possible. If we're going to plant a trillion trees, we're going to have to move some homeless camps. Okay. Because you can't plant the trees in the middle of the homeless camps.
It would be cool if you planted trees and then built tree houses on them in which homeless people could live.
Maybe we can grow trees that the homeless can live in. People have talked about like growing housing.
But no,
not a bad idea. I like it.
Well, that's why this ultimately this election is rather moot. I mean, how many times has an incumbent not won? Let's see, Clinton beat George Bush.
Yeah, that's the last time.
That's the only time I can think of.
It's happened twice in my lifetime. George Bush did not get reelected. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to count.
Clinton was just too sexy.
I'm not going to count Ford because that, well.
Ford was like a emergency Hail Mary put in the second string quarterback.
The Republicans did not mount a serious campaign in 1992 because they did not take Bill Clinton seriously. That's what happened there. Jimmy Carter did not win. Jimmy Carter did not win primarily because the American economy was in tatters.
Yeah.
And the American people were unhappy with the hostage situation in Iran and did not think that Carter had done enough about that. Those were the two things that cost him. So he lost on a wave of, you know, the malaise forever speech. He lost on a wave of genuine discontent among the American people. George Bush lost because he failed to run a meaningful campaign and capitalize on the goodwill of the American people. Bill Clinton's walking around going, hey, we can do this better. I feel your pain. And also mobilized the minority vote in a way that the Republicans just couldn't. Donald Trump, right now, does not face those problems. There's no great malaise. The majority of the American people aren't really unhappy with him about anything. Is there 30% that's really unhappy with the fact that he exists? Yes. But the problem the Democrats run into is if they try and attack him on his record, he can come back and cite fact after fact after fact about how we're doing better now. That old Ronald Reagan line from 1984. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? You will hear that again.
Yeah.
That will come back this summer and this fall. And the American people are going to sit there and they're going to be like, you know what? I don't like this guy, but gosh darn it, he's good for my wallet. He's good for the household budget.
I was going to say, and that's precisely the point I was trying to make before, too, just with Ken. It's not even about a Bernie Sanders overcoming Trump. It's about anybody overcoming Trump because any approval rating, even if his approval rating was abysmal, once you actually said, well, why? The only thing I could say is his personality.
Yeah.
He says stupid things on the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But what about take out put it on paper. Put on paper, things about our government and how it looks right now. Nobody can say, this is the worst we've been in years. Because it's not. I remember 2008. I graduated from college in 2008. It was a nightmare. If our economy, if everything looked right now like it did in 2008, then there's a chance that Trump would be voted out of office.
Donald Trump sat there in the State of the Union last Tuesday night, and this was a
didn't someone do something with that?
And this was this was a deliberate move, by the way. Ripped California over and over and over again, because Nancy Pelosi is sitting in back of him, and he's skinning her alive.
It's like honestly, it's gotten to the point where it's like watching children fight in the schoolyard.
Yeah. But the problem is, everything that he said about California is true. California is a disaster right now.
I don't live there anymore, so I'm not obligated to
but
defend them.
But you did,
right?
And you lived there not that long ago.
And I left.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who has the ability to get out of that state is getting out right now.
It kept being on fire. I did not enjoy that. There was a fire the block diagonally across from me. And I said to the firefighters, I was like, should I be like leaving? They're like, your building's concrete. You should be okay. Yeah. And I just watched this two-story fire and like sat there, fingers crossed they're going to put it out. They put it out. And the next day I'm driving to work in Pasadena and the woods next to the highway is on fire.
Oh, yeah.
And my car, which is filled with gasoline, is 15 feet from, again, two-story high flames.
Yeah.
And that's like one of the things that's messed up in California.
Just had hillsides falling down when I lived out there, so.
Oh, yeah, I remember that happened once, too.
Briefly, I want to touch on coronavirus, because we haven't had an opportunity to delve into this.
We really haven't.
It has a name now, Shay. Did you know that?
I did. It's got a, it's COVID-19.
Yes, coronavirus identified 2019 is what that's short for.
That's right. Thank God, because like I said, I hear coronavirus, I just think beer sickness.
Let's go to Mexico. This is what drives me nuts. This is what drives me absolutely nuts. Is these touchy feely progressive flunky bureaucrats. Hanging around places like the World Health Organization. So here's Director General Tedros. Tedros Ghebreyesus. I don't know where he's from, but this is what Tedros had to say. Quote, "We had to find a name that did not refer to a geographical location, an animal, an individual, or group of people, and which is also pronounceable and related to the disease. Having a name matters to prevent the use of other names that can be inaccurate or stigmatizing."
You mean like China virus?
You should have called it bat cough. That's what they should have called it, bat cough. Hey, you know what? Bat cough.
Yeah, I mean, where was all of this when bird flu was around?
Yeah.
Where was all of this? We have to be, God, people are too PC
well,
now.
Well, Tedros wasn't in charge back then. So, you know, we had the bird flu. We had the
We don't want to trigger anybody with this deadly disease.
We had the swine flu, all right? But we can't have the bat cough.
We live in such a ridiculous world. Oh, my God.
We don't want people stigmatizing
bats.
Yeah,
we don't want people to stigmatize. Yeah, they got enough with that whole Dracula thing.
I mean, I can understand why you wouldn't want to call it like China flu, because yes, that's bad. That's wrong.
And it's, I wouldn't say, and not entirely accurate.
Right. But you,
that'd be like calling Ebola like Central Africa sickness or something.
Yeah, you can pretty much, well, that's named after a river. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So you're still kind of doing that.
Yeah. But no, we don't do that anymore. We're not going to stigmatize anybody. It's bat cough.
But now,
right?
What I would like to know is, what is the coronavirus's preferred pronoun?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to try and, I don't want to make that mistake again. Still answering on Twitter for the last time. So, these are the numbers as of this morning. 45,172 cases worldwide, 1,115 deaths. 1,113 of those, I think, is the current number in China. And this is an important thing with this, because people, depending on where you get your news from, and hopefully you're not getting it from the Sun, or the Metro, or Facebook, where people share the Sun and the Metro. Breitbart or Alex Jones,
Because on the one hand, you have the Sun and the Metro talking about how this is the apocalypse to end all apocalypses. And then they've got the locust stories running underneath that. And then over on Breitbart and InfoWars, it's all about how the government is going to round us up and put us in camps because the bat cough is coming. By the way, I'm calling it bat cough. Tedros can call things whatever he
calling
wants.
Calling it bat cough. You sound so defiant.
This virus has a 2.5% mortality rate. Okay? That is about... That's more than flu. That is higher than flu. But it has a 2.5% mortality rate in China. Outside of China, it has a mortality rate of near zero. And people who have come down with it are going to the hospital and getting treated and going home. And they're fine. So the mortality rate here may say as much about the Chinese health system as it does about the lethality of the virus itself. But let me put a very, very strong caveat on this. China is overwhelmed by this disease right now. And if you think that this is something that could only happen in China, that's not true.
Oh, no. It just happens to be in China.
If you had an outbreak of this magnitude in Chicago, Los Angeles, Dallas, New York, you would have similar problems. Shortage of beds, shortage of supplies, people not getting diagnosed, people breaking quarantine, everything that we're seeing in China. If this were to happen in a major U.S. city, the one place that I think might actually be able to cope with it, we're in it, is Boston. Because we have so many hospitals.
I was going to say, because we are like hospital-tastic.
We have more beds per capita than just about anybody in the country.
Yeah, that's what I was at a lecture the other night, and that's what somebody was saying, is that he got very sick when he was in southern New Hampshire. And he was like, if I had gotten sick anywhere else, I'd probably be dead right now.
Yeah.
But because I was, I think it was a weird time of day, so like a 45-minute drive to some of the best hospitals in the world, it was fine. But yeah, I mean.
But make no mistake, even here in Boston, where we are better equipped to handle something like this, I don't think there is any health system on the planet that is going to be able to deal with 45,000 patients in a month.
No.
And that's, you know...
They're like camps that they made for
these
people.
Yeah, they're building hospitals in 10 days just to house everybody.
Just to keep them away from everybody.
So you're dealing with shortage of supplies. You're dealing with shortage... They've been sending Communist Party officials in there to replace the doctors. And basically saying, hey, do it for the glory of the Communist Party. Shades of Chernobyl, by the way. You know, where it's like, hey, Red Army veterans, he wants to go volunteer to shovel the radioactive material off the top of the reactor building. You know, it's do it for the country. That's not what you want to see. But when you have this many people sick in this shorter period of time, this is what you're going to get. And don't think that that's just a China problem. That could happen here. Could happen in any city in the world because no one is prepared to deal with that level of an outbreak. Now, the flip side of it, there aren't going to be any government camps, okay? Yes, FEMA and the CDC have set up quarantine facilities at some old military bases around 7 airports in the United States. They have done this because if one person on an airplane has bat cough, they have to quarantine everybody on the airplane. And that's where they're going to put those people for 2 weeks. They're not going to come to your house, kick down your door, and drag you out. The United States, historically, has used shelter in place and quarantine in place in situations like this. You may find yourself stuck inside your house for 2 weeks with the National Guard enforcing a curfew outside your front door, but they're not going to haul you off to a camp.
Yeah.
We don't do that here.
Anymore.
No, we don't do that here. Internment camps and Americans are incompatible with each other. And the government knows that.
Yeah, that's true.
So you can let go of that fear. you know, if we get the big outbreak here, which is super, super, super unlikely, if we get the big outbreak here, you're going to get 2 weeks off from work, and you're going to be stuck at home, and you're going to have to deal with your family. That may be worse than being in an internment camp, but at least you'll be in familiar surroundings, and you'll have Hulu.
You'll have Hulu. God forbid we never lose Hulu.
What you don't want to do, and please stop doing this, don't avoid Chinese restaurants. I can't believe I'm even saying this. Oh, my God.
You know that the Chinese restaurants in America aren't even actual Chinese food, right? Like, that's not what they're eating over in China. They don't have those chicken fingers and, like, poo-poo platters and crap. That's not what they're eating.
They don't let them serve bat over here. You're not going to get bat cough from going to the Chinese restaurant. Chinese food is safe and delicious, and you should eat more of it. Right? What's your favorite Chinese restaurant?
My favorite Chinese restaurant? I really like Chinese food.
What?
I do like some, like, do you know what Phoebe? Phoebe Angle, friend of the show. We love her forever. I'm going to tavern tonight, by the way. But Phoebe has definitely gotten me into, what's the thing she really likes with all the little tubs? Dim sum?
Oh, yeah.
Dim sum. Like, well, for me, Chinese food, like growing up, I very much associated with.
Is that Imperial Garden or Imperial Palace down on Washington Street that's got the Boston? Great dim sum.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly where you're talking
about.
It's
a place upstairs. The room is massive.
Yeah. And it's just people coming around, just like, have some.
So good. Well,
when I was a kid, it was always like, what do you call it? It was always like we'd go to Imperial Terrace in Quincy after like school banquets and stuff and get a poo-poo platter, and I was like forced to eat those chicken fingers with way too much breading.
We're getting dim sum.
I love, do you know what I like are those like things, they're like made of rice, I think they're almost like mochi but like savory mochi.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They're like buns but they have crap inside.
Oh,
of them.
Yeah.
So good.
I love mochi too. Jade Garden Wakefield, awesome, best Chinese place in town. Or Jade Gourmet, excuse me. Best Chinese place in town in Wakefield. Check it out. Their food is fantastic. But apparently people aren't eating Chinese food because of the bat cough. Folks, you're not going to get the bat cough from the Chinese food. Please patronize your Chinese restaurants. Chinese food is delicious. I'm not going to say healthy because it depends on what you get. All right? If you're looking for healthy, stick to the poke bowl. But if you're looking for delicious with a side of cream cheese and fried, the Chinese will get you covered. It's so good. I love Chinese food.
It is.
I love Chinese food.
It's, I'll warm to it. I'm more of a Japanese food person thing. What are you?
I thought the air conditioner just came on, but it's a fan next to me.
I was going
to
say. It's,
and I'm like, I know it's warm, but
yeah, it's not like that warm.
Yeah. So, bat cough, you know, folks, calm down. Please, stop following the alarmist press. Stop worrying about the government coming and taking you to a camp. Not going to happen. If we have an outbreak in this country, you're going to shelter in place. And hopefully, they'll let the Chinese restaurants stay open so you can at least get food delivery. Now, one thing I would recommend, if you want to plan ahead, and this is something that people should just do in general, you should at all times have enough stuff in your house to last you for 3 to 5 days. Longer than that, actually. The federal government recommends longer than that.
I've got a bunch of canned crap.
Yes, there are a couple of things that you want to have.
I say I have a lot of like canned vegetables. I have canned soup.
And
I have a lot of things like, if need be, yeah. I could eat them without doing anything to them.
Exactly. And that's what you want to have.
Like, you don't have to boil it. You don't have to, like, I can just sit there and eat all the crushed tomatoes. Yeah, Mom, thanks for stocking my cupboard. You should see my cupboard right now. She comes over like, here, I had some extra crushed tomatoes. I'm like, I know you did last time too, Mom. I know there's 11 of them in there.
But here's the thing. You should have this
Thank
stuff.
Thank you, Mom. I love you.
In case there's an earthquake or a tornado.
Or a fill in the blank.
Or a blizzard that shuts the roads down for 3 days. Okay? So I'm going to give you two really, really quick tips. Okay? A case of bottled water, 24 bottles, right, will satisfy the needs of an adult for 4 days. Okay, that's 6 bottles of water a day. up to 7 or 8 days with rationing. So for every adult in your house, or every person in your house, actually, next time you go to the supermarket, figure out how many people are in your house, 3, 4, 5, 11, whatever. Go buy that many cases of water. Stick them in the basement. All right? Drink the bottled water as if it was regular bottled water. Open up the one on top. Have some bottled water.
Yeah.
When that one runs out, go get another one.
Yeah.
Okay? Put that at the bottom and then open up the next one. So that you're doing two things. Number one, you're constantly bringing fresh water into the house. And number two, you got the stuff on hand in case you need it. It's that simple.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm big on stocking. I mean, I do it with seltzer, but in a pinch, it's the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still getting hydrated. And I'll buy, like, 15 at once. And the lady at the grocery store will just look at me like... And it's like, first of all, this is going to last me several days. Second of all, if we get snowed in tomorrow and our pipes freeze, I got plenty of water.
Yeah.
Do you?
Exactly. Exactly. What if the water main breaks outside your house? And what does everybody do? They run out. You can't get water for three towns around. Boil water issue... boil water order issued. Can't get water for five towns around. If you got this stuff sitting in your cellar, you're like, okay, I'm good. Got the water. Another thing I'd recommend, get yourself a box of steel wool. Plain steel wool. No synthetic steel wool. Actual steel wool. Fine grain, not the big, wide aluminum foil stuff. Good old-fashioned, regular, plain metal steel wool. Get yourself a box of this.
What does it do?
And get yourself a 4-pack of 9-volt batteries.
The steel will give them more charge?
Nope. If you short steel wool on a 9-volt battery, it will create fire.
Oh, it's just like an Orange is the New Black when you don't watch that, do you?
No.
Or didn't, I should say. It's not on anymore. But they use, when they get cigarettes in the prison, you know, they don't have lighters or matches, obviously. But what they do is they use, like, the metallic gum wrappers, like the metallic on, like, wax paper, and put them on either end of the battery, and it sets on. Oh, weird.
Get yourself a 4-pack of 9-volt batteries and some steel wool. Once a year, you throw those batteries into your smoke detectors and go get new batteries so they don't die. And you've got the ability to make fire. Now, you can have matches too, but should your matches get wet, this still works. This works when it's wet. And a wet match will never light again, but a wet piece of steel wool can dry out and be useful. So just a couple of things to consider. As you were planning...
Just a couple of things.
But I wouldn't be too worried about the bad cough.
Can I say, though, just with regard to, I know you're calling it the bad cough, but the whole big thing about, like, not wanting to name it anything controversial.
Yeah.
Everyone's still thinking all the controversial stuff anyways.
Yeah.
Like we were talking about the Chinese restaurants. Like, that just occurred to me a second ago, but you were busy talking about steel wool, and I didn't want to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, but changing the name, calling this thing COVID-19 is not going to stop people from
being
avoiding,
like,
Chinese restaurants.
Being like bats in China.
Yeah. Like, don't be dumb. Order Chinese food. It's tasty. You love it. And the Chinese need your business. They do. No one's
buying their
stuff.
Most importantly... WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. Are we...
Yeah, that's the thing that happened, right?
Oh, shoot. We didn't do it last week, so I don't have one.
Oh, all right. I'll do one. And then I assume that you... Yeah, we didn't do it last week because it was all Oscars all the time last week. That's all right. We'll need the time for the movies at the end.
I was going to say... My bad.
That's the thing that happened. The strangest stories from the past week. Florida, don't make it easy on the cops, guys. Ian Simmons, 34, but not old enough to understand irony, got pulled over on Interstate 10 for speeding while out with his friend Joshua Reinhardt. Police proceeded to search the vehicle and found a bag full of drugs, including cocaine, methamphetamine, and fentanyl, stashed in a bag printed with the phrase... bag full of drugs. The novelty item available online will not endear you to police if you take its meaning literally. Simmons and Reinhardt are in a Florida jail on a $117,000 bond.
Like, seriously? Do you get stupider? Like, is it...
They found the bag full of drugs.
That was very easily identified because it was labeled bag full of drugs.
Because it was labeled bag full of drugs. Guys... Guys, it is WMFO Medford on the Tell. Mikey D is going to be here in just about 20 minutes. Before that, we still have to talk about the movies opening this weekend. We'll get the timing down on this thing.
Yeah. See, that's the thing is the past we've not had. That's my bad on not having a thing that happened. We have not had it for like two shows because we kept going overtime for other stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like it was out of my brain. And yeah. I knew I was sitting there being like, there's something else I usually... have prepared that I don't have prepared, and that's what it was. But so I'm sorry, Derek. I'm sorry, listeners.
No. I should have specified it in the email that went out to all of the show staff last night.
the whole staff.
That's you. Yeah, all of the staff. We will be back in just a few right here on WMFO Medford.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please lower your aerial when entering Universal Studios Car Wash?
Car Wash. A typical day in L.A. Car Wash, yeah. Mr. Richard Pryor is Daddy Rich.
Praise the Lord! Praise the Lord! Yeah. Hallelujah! Yeah. Hallelujah! Why don't you climb on board and believe in me? Because it's better to have money and not to need it than to need it not to have it.
Well, praise this car, honey.
Thank you, miss.
Franklin Ajay, Professor Irwin Corey, and George Carlin as the cabbie.
We will go anywhere. We are not yellow. Get it? It's no kind of a slur in the Chinese or anything like that.
Special guest, the Pointer Sisters, and a full disco soundtrack. From Universal Pictures, it's a clean movie. Rated PG, parental guidance suggested.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Belaine. With me, as always, is the illustrious Derek Gary. Illustrious. I was trying to think of that word the other day. I see you and just illustrious. There it is. We're almost done with you here, but before we go, we are going to do our one of our newer and one of our favorite segments, which is See It, Stream It, Skip It, where we discuss the movies that are coming out this week, and we tell you whether we would see it, stream it, or skip it.
We got four this weekend, Shay.
Four.
This is the follow-up weekend from Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Did you go see the Birds of Prey?
I did not see Birds of Prey.
You and the rest of America, because the movie did so badly in its opening weekend that they have changed the title.
That's...
like a week into its release.
I mean, they're going to regret that.
They've changed the title. It is no longer Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. It is now Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey, which is probably what you should have called it in the first place.
I was going to say, the funny thing, I remember when I saw the trailer for it, which was, I want to say before Knives Out or before Just Mercy. I think Knives Out. It seems like it would make more sense for Knives Out. Anyways, remember when I saw the trailer for it, I looked at like the title and was just like, okay, first of all, that's a butt ton of words.
Yeah.
Second of all, you hear Birds of Prey, I'm picturing an Angry Birds movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like
Angry Birds 2, Birds of Prey.
Yeah, like you hear, you know what I mean? Like, I hear Knives Out, I know that I'm gonna be going to a movie that's gonna involve knives and someone being stabbed and people going at each other. All of that from two words. Birds of Prey, none of it. I would never think like a bunch of women... I don't get why she sticks with that franchise, because she's better than that.
She likes playing the role, and she actually...
I think it's really for fun for her.
She agitated to get this movie made. Agitated is probably, but she was a cheerleader for this film.
She's very cute as Harley Quinn, I will say.
Like, she's
great in the role. It's just that I don't think Harley Quinn has enough of a following, I guess.
Harley Quinn is really popular among, like, 10 to 15 year old girls who are in the rebellious phase.
Yeah, it's like their version of emo. It's like they're emo, but they need to be like a little more peppy about it.
Yeah, because
that's the thing is Harley Quinn, I think the character is adorable. It's like, hi, I'm so cute, I'm gonna kick your butt. Like, I get the appeal.
She's actually a great and interesting feminist icon.
Yeah.
Because the thing about
Harley... She's the Joker's girlfriend, or ex-girlfriend, if memory serves. Yeah?
The thing about Harley Quinn is when you think about women, and when you think about psychologically damaged women and the way that they're typically portrayed in media, their violence is directed inward. They either drink too much, or they sleep around too much, or they cut themselves, but they do things to hurt themselves. Harley Quinn is just the opposite. Harley Quinn's got a baseball bat and a head full of attitude, and she's coming for everybody.
Yeah.
It's all directed outward. And that is the key to that character. And that's what makes that character fun.
That's whenever I see like her doing something, like I said, like I've only seen the trailers and stuff. I picture Pink playing in the background.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just like, na 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 na.
She was the best thing in Suicide Squad. But apparently is not carrying this. I don't think they marketed it right. I don't think. Now, here's the other problem. It's an R-rated movie. And what did I just say?
15-year-olds.
Yeah. Fan base is 10 to 15. You can't go see the R-rated movie. Who is this for?
That's true. Like, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, if I was really bored and the movie I wanted to see was sold out, that's how I would see that movie.
Yeah. But mostly that's a stream it at best.
Yeah.
So here's what it's up against this weekend. Maybe the title.
Unless so, because I don't smoke pot anymore.
Maybe the title change. Maybe the title change will pay off for them.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed for you, girl.
Your big blockbuster opening this weekend is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yes.
You fired up for the Hedgehog, Shea Spillane? Big Sonic fan, are you?
I'm going to be perfectly frank with you, and maybe you didn't expect this, but you have to remember when I grew up.
All right.
I'm totally seeing this.
Oh, my God.
I am totally seeing this, and here's why. First of all, I'm a 90s kid. Like, I remember when my parents bought my brother, they said it was for all of us, but let's be frank, it was for my brother. Brought my brother a Sega Genesis.
Sega.
I wouldn't even play. First of all, it was like the most amazing because we had had Nintendo before that. And I mean, obviously, compared to the graphics now, it's nothing.
Yeah.
But
although all the games look like that now because it costs a lot of money to do the fancy graphics. Yeah. So everybody's gone retro.
But, but that compared to Nintendo, I mean, it was like the first, it was like when Windows 95 came out after having a computer without a mouse for years, where you had to type in //.
Like, wow, look at this thing.
And I would just sit. I mean, I played when he wasn't there, but I would just sit and watch my brother play Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, I loved it. But part of the reason I want to see this movie, first of all, James Marsden.
Really?
But, oh yeah, James Marsden does it for me.
Okay.
But that aside,
I suppose he's non-threatening.
Glad to see Jim Carrey doing something that he's, I think he's going to do well.
Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik is one of the reasons that I
that you don't want to see it?
Not at this point. If it was 10 years ago, I would have been all over it. At this point in his career, wacky, over-the-top Jim Carrey just is not doing it for me anymore.
But the thing is, I think that Dr. Robotnik, I love that I'm about to like speak very prolifically about the cartoon character, but Dr. Robotnik is, I think it will be a nice marriage of like traditional zany Jim Carrey and like the kind of brooding, like harsh roles that he's, it'll be like a bridge between the two Jims.
Yeah, I don't
but
know.
Well, for the most part though, I just think
he's good in that Showtime series that I don't watch. where because
what an endorsement.
I just, no, he's good in it. I just hate the show because the show is bizarre. And
does Molly watch it?
No, she may when I'm not home. But it's, you know,
she may be hiding that she watches it for me.
I mean, as far as I know, she doesn't. You know, we both watch Homeland, so we're seeing the trailers for it again, and I'm like, yeah, you know, I just there's something about that quirky, weird Portlandia vibe that I just turns me off as a viewer.
Well, what I was gonna say is, beyond anything else, I mean, that it's live action and it's Sonic, I think that the graphics are going to be really cool.
Well, they did redesign Sonic after the internet freaked out at the first version.
True.
And the new version, I have to say, looks good. It's a nice looking Sonic.
Nice looking Sonic.
If you had Ryan Reynolds doing the voice of Sonic, I'd be all over this.
I was going to say, that I think was a missed opportunity.
But he's already...
I close my eyes and I'm like, Ryan Reynolds.
He's already done Pikachu. And you can't do Pikachu and Sonic.
But, you're just being way too cute with the Asian-based cartoon characters.
But I will tell you.
you're monopolizing the market.
I will tell you that Ryan Reynolds is a national treasure, and if Ryan Reynolds was doing the voice of Sonic, I would be going to see that this weekend.
Ryan Reynolds is, I mean, everything about him is a treat. Like, and since like the beginning of his career, I've thought so. And like on and off screen, like, I mean, he dated Alanis Morissette forever. That's so cool.
Yeah.
And now he's with Blake Lively, who, even though she's gorgeous, is also just very cool.
Yeah.
The pinnacle of Ryan Reynolds being awesome was after the whole Peloton disaster when he made
the commercial for the gin.
Yeah. I mean, that is him. That is like serving on a plate, like, oh, you want to know what Ryan Reynolds is like? Here, watch this ad and hear the story behind it.
So Sonic the Hedgehog, Shay says, see it. My life is complete without it. It's a skip it for me.
I just want to see it on a big screen.
Next up, we have Downhill, which is from the creators of The Descendants. Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus are a married couple who go on a ski vacation. The lodge gets hit by an avalanche, not a serious avalanche that kills a lot of people, but an avalanche nonetheless. And he gets up and runs away while she stays there to defend the children. It's a bit like that episode of Seinfeld with the fire alarm and George running out the door.
Yeah.
You remember that? It looks like they turned that...
pushes kids out of the way.
Yeah. It looks like they turned that into a movie. And I'm going to say this probably has the best shot at being the sleeper hit of the winter. Because I look at this cast. Julia Louis-Dreyfus can't open a film, but Will Ferrell used to be able to do that. The two of them both have a tremendous amount of goodwill from audiences. I don't know that this film necessarily knows what it wants to be. Mm. If it doesn't look like straight up kooky comedy from the previews. But it also doesn't
from the stills.
It also doesn't look like it gets too heavy. So it may just hit that right note, you know, where it's thoughtful and funny in the right places. So it's a see it for me.
See, I just don't really see this having anything for me. Like, it's and I love both of them. But just like reading the reviews that I've read of it, I'll skip it. Maybe if I was like staying at my mom's house and she wanted to watch something, I would watch that with her. Right. You know that my mom's going to text me right now and say, what's the name of it? I'm going to remember that.
Yeah.
Mom, my phone is in my bag, okay? Don't bother.
Next up is The Photograph. The kind of movie that I think they really ought to make more of. Mm. If you're a fan of Love Jones, this is the movie that you've been waiting for, I believe. This is the story of the daughter of a photographer leaves her estranged daughter a collection of photographs upon her death. She's played by Issa Rae. And she's got this box of photographs, no understanding of who her mother was and no understanding of why it was left behind. She is then introduced to a reporter who is writing a story about her mother, and that's Lakeith Stanfield. And the two of them fall in love. This is one of those hot, steamy Valentine's Day. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. We're getting in love the right way. Looks like a great, great, great film.
Yeah,
looks like a great film. Now, this is a film that is clearly marketed to a black audience, right? You can't go see it if you're not black. I guarantee you, from the trailers, it's going to be hot. We know that.
Yeah.
But it looks like a good, sensitive, adult, romantic film. From a different perspective and the kind of thing I would like to see more of.
Well, and that's the thing. I said see it for this one as well because I saw the trailer for it. That is the one that I saw the trailer of before Just Mercy.
Yeah.
And it really looks like a really, really good film.
It looks really good.
And that's the thing is, yeah, there's like the steamy romance, whatever, but it is secondary to the, it's not like a cheesy, like we're doing this because it's Valentine's Day. Yeah, there's a plot, but it's guy meets girl.
Yeah.
Like this isn't like that. Like this is, there's so much of it involves the story of her mother and the romance is kind of like an add on to it.
This is
like the point of the movie is not for these two people to get together, at least at its foundation.
This is straight out of the Love Jones mold, you know, and Love Jones was a film about poets. This is a film about photographers and writers, and it's about their lives. And romance is part of their lives. It's not the whole film. I didn't mean to phrase that like that. But, it's, you know, it's the cherry.
It's just the cherry on top of the sundae, not the entire sundae.
Finally, so that's a see it from both of us.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, if you don't get a chance to see it, it's definitely going to be a streamer for you. Finally, this weekend. For the white kids, because you got to have a scary movie for Valentine's Day weekend.
For the white kids.
Yeah. This is what the white kids do. This is like what the white teenagers do. It's like, let's go see a scary movie on Halloween.
I need an excuse to hide my face in your brawny chest.
They put one out every single year, and the same audience shows up every single year. So when I say it's for the white kids, I'm not being racist. I'm just being honest.
You're just going based on statistics.
Fantasy Island. Yes, it's the Fantasy Island you remember, only no, this time, it's a horror movie. something's up on Fantasy Island, and everybody's dying, and the attractive young people who are on Fantasy Island need to figure out its secret if they hope to survive. Michael Pena somehow got talked into playing Mr. Rourke in this thing. Maggie Q somehow got pulled into this thing. Everybody else here is whoever Blumhouse could get for cheap, because this is a Blumhouse film. Believe me when I tell you, if you've seen one Blumhouse movie, you've seen them all, and you will not miss anything if you miss this movie. this is part of what's gone wrong with horror. Shay, can you redeem Fantasy Island in any way, shape, or form?
It's okay, so first of all, I like Lucy Hale, I will say. She, just like the stuff that I've seen her in, I've been like, yeah, she's a good little actress. She's good at exactly what she's there for, which is being like a cute, somewhat quirky, but still super hot brunette. Like, that's what she is.
This is what Blumhouse does, is they take likable young actors and actresses and put them in these bad, cheaply made movies.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, I know her from Pretty Little Liars. Enough said. But for what it is, this is going to appeal to the white teenagers, absolutely. But I am a very big fan of like the cheesetastic horror movie.
Okay.
Like if I could just have them take everything that they did in the late 70s and early 80s in horror movies and keep doing